Welcome to Season 3 of Pierpoint Perspectives, the Securities Finance Podcast. This season focuses on technology providers that service this community. We'll be talking about securities finance systems, as well as cutting-edge technology applications that service investors and hedge funds, taking new approaches, including AI and robotics. This season brings you the choice of video as well as audio, with the podcasts in all the usual places and the video casts available on our YouTube channel. Strap yourself in as we go on a tech ride to the future, brought to you by the consulting team at Pierpoint Financial. So now, over to your hosts.
Hello and welcome to Season 3, Episode 3 of Pierpoint Perspectives, The Art of Securities Finance. I'm your host, Roy Zimmerhansel, and practice lead at Pierpoint. Season 3 is focused on technology, the improvements, the current and coming changes, and the disruptors. Today's episode looks at one of those disruptors, targeted at hedge funds trying to improve their treasury functioning. The hedge fund servicing community has seen acquisitions and mergers, startups and shutdowns, and today we're looking at one of those new entrants, Kayenta. Now, why do I think this episode is relevant to you? There are three reasons in my mind. Number one, the journey to financial and operational efficiency is just that. It's a journey, not a destination. Kayenta is neither the first, nor will they be the last trying to solve for problems that will improve the operating environment for hedge funds. Number two, efficiency and automation means less wasted money, and wasted money is often easy money for service providers. To the extent that some of the fat is carved out of the process, well, that's some of the profits gone, and that inevitably has an impact on other parts of the supply chain. The issues and approach used by Kayenta, well, that's the third reason, I think, and they might be narrowly focused on the hedge fund to PB side of things, but I think they're equally useful when looking to solve problems in really any leg of the securities finance continuum. Finally, I think I've been dealing now with the people at Kayenta for about 18 months or so, and I've always been impressed by their knowledge and their views and perspectives. But when an old contact of mine, Chris Hagstrom, joined as CEO, well, that really grabbed my interest. So without any further delay, I'll start my interview with Chris Hagstrom, CEO of Kayenta. Hi, Chris. Listen, thanks very much for joining me today to talk about what's actually happening at your new firm.
Very excited to be here, Roy. Thanks for having me. It's good to reconnect.
Look, I think a great starting point might be if you just take a few minutes to introduce yourself to the viewers and listeners.
Yep, sure thing. So I'm currently the CEO of Kayenta. We're going to talk a lot about that today, a treasury technology firm. After spending almost 30 years on the sell side of Wall Street, Bear Stearns, SG, and most recently UBS. When I left UBS, I was running their financing business in the Americas, and excited to talk a little bit more about Kayenta.
Right. So let's start with the start, because you're just the latest in a line of guys who have gone from the business end of things into fintech. And look, I've had my own experience doing that. So I'm curious what the drivers were, why you wanted to make the move, and just personally, what are the kinds of things that you found interesting, fun, interesting, challenging, and maybe not so interesting?
You know, when I was working for a big bank, I was always yearning to be able to invest in smaller companies or be part of a more entrepreneurial kind of situation. So when I left UBS, I definitely was focused on an entrepreneurial atmosphere and thinking about not just do I want to work for a startup company, but work with people that you really like and that you've known and that you trust. And that was one of the big things that I found at Kayenta. So, you know, the management team that I'm working with, I've known for 20 years. And really, this kind of venture, which we'll talk more about, just gave me a chance to take the clients that I'd met over the last 30 years, the institutional knowledge that I had from working on the bank side as a prime broker, into something that was entrepreneurial, but still trafficked in that space, which was exciting.
And I guess that's one of the things that's different about how in-house technology works at really any bank, where they tend to be technology experts, but don't really have the knowledge side of things. So was that your experience as well?
Yeah. So, look, I think one of the foundations of Kayenta is just bringing market experience, both from the buy side and the sell side, into a technology solution. My founders, Dan Childs, was the Citadel treasurer. We have another gentleman, Mark Toon, who worked for Oxif. And then you have myself, Matt Peekman, Kelly Russo, all having a lot of sell side experience. So definitely an ability to take that inner working knowledge, spin it into a solution that we think is, it's effective, it's easy to use, and it gives you a little bit of that secret sauce because we saw it from the inside.
So what is the solution or what's the problem you're trying to solve? Because I see lots of technology applications that are out there, and that really tends to be, quite often it can be tech people hyping the tech they have. Isn't this a great thing? But the question is, what's the problem being addressed?
Yeah, what we tried to do is bring together an all-encompassing treasury technology solution. There are quite a few people out there doing things in the treasury space, and with all due respect, doing parts of it really well. I think our goal was, all right, let's all take a step back. If we're sitting in the seat and we know what the prime brokers need and want, we know what the hedge funds need and want, what would a treasury solution include that would give someone the ability to, at a large hedge fund, have data and things at their fingertips to solve for problems they already understand, or for even smaller funds who don't have the resources, who don't have the headcount, who may not even have a treasurer, to give them something that they can utilize that's affordable, that can be the filter for that activity. So, when you think of Kayenta, we're talking about a foundational data lake that allows you to reconcile what you're paying your providers, which is an important point a lot of people overlook. Manage your wallet, not just what are you paying people high level, but what are the firms actually making off of me? Again, having that institutional knowledge, being able to educate hedge funds, how much are they actually spending for the dollar that they're paying? And then taking it a little bit further than that, with all that data, optimizing for everything across the treasury stack, which means securities lending optimization, optimizing for your collateral, how you're borrowing your money against what types of collateral, am I being charged the right amounts, even looking into things like Axlis, FX optimization, et cetera. So I think what we're trying to do is make it simple, easy to understand, affordable, and do it across the spectrum so everyone cares about some of it. And the way that we've set the product up is you don't have to take all of it, right? You can take the things that you need, not just the entire scope. So yeah, I think we, being newer to the market, is also an advantage in a funny way. And you mentioned the technology. Being this recent, we built the technology in the last year and change. The technology that we were able to use for this system makes it easy to integrate, completely simple to put it into any tech stacks that you need to. And then the biggest thing is it makes it more affordable. So it's scalable, it's easy to use, it's easy to integrate, and it's cost effective.
Look, all of that sounds great. But look, yeah. The reality is that sounds like pretty big ambitions. It sounds like a pretty new business. I've had interaction with members of the team for a while now and sort of been watching it. But so surely in a year or 2 years, you guys haven't solved all of the problems that funds have. So kind of take me on the path of maybe the background, where it started, what the focus was, what the focus is today, and then maybe later on we can address where it's kind of going after today, right?
Yeah. So look, like I said at the start, when you think of someone sitting in the seat at a particular hedge fund, there's all kinds of things where you can start. The most simple foundation to the system is looking at the data. And the first thing you have to do is you got to get it from all these different sources, prime brokers, admins, OMS, all these things. What you don't realize is, of course, the file formats are different, the information's presented differently, but it's further than that. It's like banks give you information and call things different things. They've also agreed, you know, very differentiated terms with the people that they're dealing with. So to get all this data in, normalize it, and be able to compare it is a huge lift. It's much bigger than anyone would anticipate. And so that's the foundation of this.
Yeah. Let's start there, because I think you've hit kind of two or three points there. So number one, you're having to get data from external providers, from internal systems. And is that a challenge, being able to bridge all that gaps? Like, have you had difficulty getting data from providers? Anyone hesitant or challenges there?
Well, look, I mean, you know, there's a couple layers to the answer. The first one is, you're dealing with big organizations, right? With prime brokers, let's use as an example, they're very busy. They have a lot of information they're trying to give to their customers, their hedge funds. So of course you meet minor roadblocks in accessing that information. The way we work is the client is authorizing and asking the prime broker to give us the information, which helps, but it's not foolproof. So it is difficult, and you do have challenges. One of the cool things that we did with the technology is we have a roadmap every day of all the files that we're getting from all of your providers. And it gives you a real-time update of whether or not we've received those and where we are in that process, so that you know how accurate the information on the output level is. And if there is some issue, we'll be talking to you about it, but you'll be able to see that as well. And look, overall, accessing the data is doable, but it is by far the biggest sort of foundation of the pyramid to get all of those pipelines set up, to get all that data in the fashion that you need it in and want it in, is where we literally spent much of the last year to get to.
Right. So that completely makes sense. And you're right. It always helps if the customer is saying, look, if you're going to give me that data, all I'm asking you to do is give it to these guys, you know, instead or as well. So you end up getting over those hurdles. But probably the biggest challenge I hear from people that are trying to aggregate data is something else you touched on, which is making the data that you receive from multiple sources mean the same thing at the one client end. So how do you, I guess, maybe give us an example, if you can, of a type of data which would sound like it would be obvious, everyone would interpret it the same way, but maybe isn't, and then what you have to do to normalize that.
Yeah, it's the best example of that is net indebtedness, right? It's like, how much am I borrowing from you every day? It's like solving a mystery. It literally, at every firm, has a different meaning or slightly different inputs. And so when we look at that, this is a cool part of the system. When I talked about the funding of long collateral, we actually take all of that data in, we break it. So we receive a lot of it at the portfolio level, right? Because a lot of these calculations happen as a portfolio, not at the individual security level. We take that, we break it down, and we get it into individual lines of data, which is then you can normalize, right? So if this broker does it this way, and this broker does it this way, and this broker does it this way, once you've decoded it all and you kind of have it in the trade level data, you can then compare it back, which is what we're doing. So a great example of that is net indebtedness. And like I said, I think this is part of the solving of the mystery, because hedge funds are getting this information, you know, they're being told what they're being charged for and how much it costs. But when you want to dig a layer or two below that, it becomes very, very difficult to do. And this system gives you full transparency. You can see just the summary. You can see, hey, today you should do three things and here they are. Or you can dig all the way down and see every position I have at a certain broker and exactly what I'm being charged today.
So the thing that's interesting, that I think the development of technology today and the expansive use of it and application has, I think, revealed that the lack of standardization is probably the biggest roadblock to a more efficient operating environment. Yeah. And, you know, in looking back at it, you know, I can see in securities lending, you know, with the challenges we went through with SFTR and are continuing to go through with SFTR with life cycle events because they're interpreted differently. So in your own experience, why are these things treated differently in different firms, and how can the same question be come up with slightly different answers at different firms? PDs.
The best way to describe it is one, historical. People have been doing this a long time, some doing it a certain way, some the other. But the more sort of direct explanation has to do with accounting rules, has to do with balance sheet rules, you know, the way prime broker X views its balance sheet versus prime broker Y. They may value things differently. They may be positioned differently. And so what it means is that everybody has a little bit of a slightly different way in which they optimize, they internalize all of these things. And because of that, again, it could be where they're based. You know, the rules in Switzerland could be different than the rules in the U.S. You have that. Then you have, you know, whether it be regulation or history of the way in which systems and balance sheets have been viewed. So there are quite a few reasons why they're not perfectly in sync. And the point that you made in the beginning of that statement about the hardest thing in this industry is around standardization of data. And it's why these problems exist. And by the way, the systems at the banks, no one's fault. Some of them were built very, very long ago, and they did not shut them down and start over. They built on top and on top and on top. And what that does is it creates this need for specific rules and specific ways in which data is presented. I don't see how that will ever be completely transformed unless we talk holy grail blockchain. Everybody uses the blockchain and unifies everything, and all of a sudden it becomes very clear. It's a little bit of a, you know, heavenly scenario. But the way it works today, it's just, it would be very, very hard to standardize across the financial industry.
Yeah. And I guess the difference is what we're talking about is internal systems, really. So it's obviously clients access the data, but, you know, it's prime broker A or prime broker B's internal system. So unlike an SFTR or a UMR, the reality is that because those two regulations are about sort of counterparties and interaction, and so therefore need standardization, and effectively you become forced to implement that. And a PB isn't forced. There is no regulation. So unless something fundamental changes, maybe in the way that they calculate and extend credit, that could that might be a catalyst for standardization, but I don't hear anything like that on the horizon.
No.
So the thing that surprised me about what you've been talking about, though, you've talked about even the big hedge funds, who I know have had people dedicated in sort of treasury resources and trying to gather this data themselves. So are you saying that there's even gaps at the larger end, at firms in terms of being able to gather the data, normalize it, and really figure out what their true costs are?
Yeah, I think, look, the gap at the larger end is not the institutional knowledge. Many of them have people that have sat in a treasury seat, or they have dedicated treasurers. They understand this business extremely well. But yeah, it does come down to that. It's like, what internal systems do they have that they're able to track how they should be paying their providers? By the way, you think of a great hedge fund who does extremely well in the market. I'm sure internally there's a lot of debate around, does the PM get a research tool or does the treasurer get a financing tool? And that's a battle that is happening. And I'm not saying treasurers don't win or don't sometimes win, but I am saying that they face those same challenges of, we have people that know what they're doing. Let's put it in a spreadsheet. Let's make it a macro and let's do our best with this. What we're proving with our technology is, especially for those funds, that's not good enough. You need understanding and real-time access to your data. I'm sure we'll talk about Archegos again at some point in this call, But, you know, the thing that default highlighted, at least for us at Kayenta, is the need for something that tells me in a heartbeat when the PM is standing over me saying, what's my exposure to this prime broker? What are we doing with across our book right now? I know how this works internally at hedge funds. These guys know generally what they're doing to get real dollar numbers at that second from one system right there at the fingertips. It's almost impossible. Roy, you know this. I mean, you've been in the market, you've seen it. Different banks we've worked at, they all have their own system. So it's like either you're pulling them through a macro and you don't know if it's reliable or if it's on time, or two, you got to access five systems and write it down on a piece of paper. Well, that doesn't work. So, you know, this whole concept of what Kayenta brings of extreme detail of data, or just a very simplified page that tells me what I want to know, real time, easy to access, and with this backup of, hey, the data is all green today. Everything here is right. So, you know, those things, yeah, most hedge funds don't have that level of technological advancement to get the information.
So to me, one of the things that strikes me, though, is that the kind of information and efficiency and extra data that you're delivering to clients or will deliver to clients, that sounds like it's not a great deal for prime brokers, right? Inefficiency often equals profitability. So I guess, do you see that as a roadblock for a wider implementation where PBs kind of put things in the way? Or do you see that there is an acceptance that, look, greater efficiency is possible and is inevitable, and I just need to get over it and get on with it? I mean, what's your experience of that?
This is a very good question. So, look, when we went on this journey with Kayenta, we knew one thing. We want the prime brokers to be our partners, not our enemies. And I'll tell you, having sat at a prime broker, there is nothing worse than having a client come back to you 3 months after you've billed them and say, Chris, there was a mistake in my billing. I need to restate my NAV. You now have done that. And then I need to go back to my management team internally and say, we made a mistake on the bill. We overcharged by $1 million. So we're going to need to give that back. Nobody wants that. So Kayenta, in the billing rec sense, allows you to avoid that problem wholeheartedly. I know prime brokers like that. The second thing is, it is true that if done efficiently and with real-time information and data, hedge funds can save money. The benefit to the prime broker is that if we get this right, the business that the hedge fund will then allocate to the different primes will be the business that they want. So it will make the business they're doing with their prime brokers more efficient, which means the primes will have a better rate of return on their balance sheet and the clients. So we're kind of trying to make both sides happy.
Yeah, and look, I have been throughout this series of podcasts, all of the technology providers always use the word partner somewhere in the interview. So what does partner mean to you? What does a partner look like? Because you're not actually partners.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think partnership means mutually beneficial. And in this case, I hope that we can, you know, lean on the prime brokers to help introduce us to the clients who will need this service the most. In return for that, we'll be showing them how we're developing, what we're developing, and letting them see what we've done and how we think it helps them. And if they have a point, you know, look, I've been in the industry a long time and a lot of these folks are friends. They come to me and say, Chris, actually, this would be really beneficial to the market generally. We're going to listen to that. So I would like to think it would be a mutually beneficial situation.
Yeah. And look, at the end of the day, the reality is that inefficiencies do disappear over time. And if people can be proactive in taking a leadership role and trying to solve for those things, then it's more likely to attract business in. So if they say, look, here's the solution, you can take the information, it works this way, you get better value out of it. You know, I think that's a winning sort of strategy for a forward thinking firm. Not everyone thinks that way. But look, I think the other point that you mentioned is you know, I and there'll be some that actually watch this. I have always had at every firm I worked at clients where I would cringe when I saw an email from them or a call from them, and not because I didn't like them, but because they were always right. I always knew that when they were contacting me, that's because we did something wrong. And it's like, oh no. So they were great bellwethers, and I loved them because they were the ones that were actually challenging me. But the reality is that that's kind of what you need, right? And so the technology, so is it, I guess maybe tell us a little bit what it does, because it sounds a little bit like, you know, just information, some of it sort of giving action, some of it reconciled. So give me a sense of what.
I'll just do it really quickly. So I think of Kayenta in three phases of technology. The first one is that foundation of the pyramid that we talked about, which is data lake, data inputs, normalization, independent reconciliation of your costs, right? Every month you're looking at it. What do I owe this one? What do I owe this? What do I owe this? If they're out, we'll tell you, great, easy to fix, you're going to save money. Number two, wallet, which then you have all that data. We're going to tell you high level, you have three prime brokers, you pay them each this. Here is what we estimate that those three prime brokers are making off of the business that you're doing with them. That's about efficiency. Where is my dollar best spent based on how much my prime brokers are able to make? That's phase one. Phase two, which we're in the heart of right now, is optimization. So you've got data, you're wrecking it, you've got wallet. Now we're going to come in every morning and we're going to tell you 5 to 10 things you can do to make or save money. This is a complex part of the development, which is why it will be a constant ongoing, because it will do simple things like your stock loan rate is 50 basis points. You could be paying 30. Here's how you do that, et cetera. It could be the long financing. I have a piece of collateral over here that's 1.5. If I move it, it could be 50 basis points over here. Those kinds of benchmarking to give you savings ideas. It will also integrate things like Axlist, which is simply when a prime broker has a position that you fit the other side of, and they can give you a benefit for that. So that's another function. I mentioned like collapsing of box positions, both on the security and the cash side. We have a currency optimization, which would basically tell you you're long this currency, you're short this currency. If you did this sort of hedge or FX forward, you could flatten that. So again, phase two is all about optimization and clearly pointing out to clients every morning, here's what you could and should be doing. And then the final phase, which is going to be an ongoing phase for Kayenta, and maybe we'll talk more about like, where do we go from here? We really do want to get to a point where we're doing all of that service for fun. And then all they have to simply do is to click a button and have that go through and process those security moves or cash moves. And, you know, some of the competition out there is doing parts of that. Our thinking is, if we can integrate with the right partner, which we've been working closely with a few on, we'll be able to achieve that much more quickly. So that's phase three. But look, you think of Kayenta, you think management team of people who have seen it on the buy and sell side, modern technology that we got lucky that we just developed it because it's scalable, it's easy, it's cost effective. And then the vision that I just outlined around, what are you going to do for me? And by the way, the price point, we didn't talk about that, but our beginning price point, we've been ranging between 35 to 50,000 annual subscription, which for a core offering, if you look at the competition, is definitely at the more affordable end. And really the reason we're doing that is because that piece of the technology once built is very scalable, and we think we can help a lot of people with that. All those other modules on top, we'll be able to offer those at maybe, you know, additional cost, but that core functionality that I mentioned of the data lake, the reconciliation, the wallet is something that once people see it, and by the way this works, you sign an NDA, you do no work, you introduce us to your prime brokers, we go away, we work the data, we normalize the data, we come back to you and say, hey, you didn't have to do anything, here's what we can do for you. And at that point, you haven't paid a dime, you get a free trial. If you like it, you sign up and we go on that journey. So I think there's a lot in there that's appealing to a hedge fund. Like I said, no work, low cost, free trial.
Yeah, I mean, look, that sounds great. Where do I sign up? look, I think hedge funds are notorious for being challenging to get money out of. So I think it's an interesting approach. But look, there's also the approach. You know, you often hear people talk about things that are kind of free trials. You know, it kind of undermines the value of the proposition. Do you see that as a challenge? You know, if I have lots of free trials that I sort of sign up for and then I never actually do. What's your thinking there?
Well, our success rate on free trials so far is 100%. So we've signed our first two clients who had free trials before they signed with us. We're testing with another 8 that we expect to have a pretty high hit rate with. Look, I think it all comes down to, are you really able to save me money? Show me how you're going to save me money. Make it very easy for me. Prove to me that I can do this every day. And if you can do that, 35 to 50 grand, I mean, Roy, you know this, the bills per month can be in the tens of millions, right? I mean, we saved a client already, one of our brand new test clients. We saved them almost 600 grand in a year on a simple collateral rule that they were overlooking. So, you know, I hear you, and this is the challenge. The challenge is you've developed this great mousetrap. It works. It's great. Our hedge fund's going to pay for it. We feel confident that they will, but it is a challenge for sure.
One of the things that I wanted to explore on that is something that I've really lost my train of thought on. So what we'll probably do is skip that, and we'll hope we come back to it because it was a brilliant idea. I think I was going to cure cancer there, but apparently not. Someone else. I think one of the questions that I asked, you've talked a lot about gathering data from multiple prime brokers and normalizing and giving you know, actions and ideas and sort of consolidated information. How much value is this for someone that has a single prime broker?
Yeah, it honestly is a little bit less so, right? Because if you're single primed, and which most funds are not today, and I would be surprised there are many, but truth is, I think we would tell you the best candidate starts at 100 million of AUM with multiple primes, right? So it can be a smaller, newer fund who's getting started, but there has to be a little bit of a level of complexity. Now, the counter to that would be you're a single prime fund, you're small, you're just getting started. Test our technology and we can show you a little bit about what you might be able to do if you had another prime broker, which maybe is something that people who don't understand the diversity play on the prime brokerage side could find useful. So I'm going to counter my statement as I think about that of what someone could benefit from if they only had one prime.
Yeah. And look, I think that was a little bit of a loaded question because I agree, you know, most funds don't have a single prime unless they're small. And it's almost impossible for them to get to be bigger if they're going to stay with only one prime broker, right? So because of institutional money flows in. So there is I see that kind of a pathway. But I think it is interesting if, you know, it's kind of like if I was starting a business today, and I started everything with best of breed. You know, you talked about some of the reasons that the technology has different standards or slightly different calculations or firm specific, variants is because you're talking about legacy systems that have developed over time. If I was starting today, you know, any of the businesses in this using current technology, using best of breed, my business would look very different and my P&L would look very different from the get-go.
Hugely. I mean, you know, I think about this all the time. You know, after I left the banking industry and started the company, as people have come and said, hey, you're interested in doing this in prime brokerage or that in prime brokerage, every single time I had those meetings, I would say, I love what I'm doing, but you should take a look at what we're doing at Kayenta because it could really help you in your journey if you're building out a new business or you're growing an old business. And we've had some interesting conversations around that. So to your point, if you could start over, certainly you might not build it yourself. I mean, even I'm not even selling Kayenta here. I'm just saying there's so many out of the box things that you can buy now that would save you so much time and so much energy and be so cost effective. I think you would totally revamp the way you would think about it. And then you take it one step further and you think about like when I love talking about the blockchain because I think it's really interesting. And I think it has a very specific use case to the financial industry when it comes to a ledger where things are documented and very specific and there's never an out trade, right? It's like there is one record and it is the record. Everyone who needs to see it sees it, but there's no errors. And so, you know, that coupled with modern technology, you could see how this could get revamped at some point.
Yeah, the challenge for sort of widespread use of blockchain, though, is the lack of standardization that we talked about. So there are some things, some aspects of it that you could do, but the challenge is it enough to really change things? And I don't think people are interested in big ticket solutions. A 3-year project that changes the world. I don't think anyone believes in those things anymore.
But that's fair.
So you talked about Archegos. You know, and I wrote an article recently where I was actually questioning whether the word prime brokerage actually means anything anymore, because it started off, it was really about a prime, and they're the ones that actually had the risk position. And now that's, you know, for all kinds of really, really good, sensible reasons, that's not the case anymore. But the more diverse it is, the less anyone has a big picture of where everything is. So that's a challenge. Archegos, I guess the question is, and you touched on it. I remember when Lehman went into default, everyone was scrambling around just figuring out what their exposure was to the different Lehman entities, let alone anyone else. And that in itself took days. And then it was kind of like the credit guys and go, well, if that took you 5 days to figure out what your exposure is to Lehman and you've got 200 counterparties, do you have any idea of where your business really is?
Yeah.
Right. So you were in the business back then. So tell me maybe in your own experience, what was your experience in terms of looking at things then, and where do you see the industry is different now, and where does your product fit into making that a more transparent situation today?
Yeah, I think, look, 08, you know, we were both there for that. Regulation change was the biggest thing that happened post all of the issues that happened in 2008. It seems as though the same theme applies throughout all of these years and anything that's gone wrong, and it's around transparency and real-time access to what's really going on. And I think 2008 changed a lot of things and how the banking industry is set up and how we operate today. A situation like Archegos is, you know, that is a situation that is explainable. But for people who see that, it seems completely inexplicable. And what I would say is, one, that issue that happened to those banks really could have happened to any bank. And as we're seeing, as their earnings are coming out, many of them did have exposure to what was happening there. And you made the point in the beginning, which is when you're doing a financing trade for someone, if you don't have a look through into what the other 10 prime brokers are doing, you have to rely on the information you're given from the client of what are they actually doing out there. And it sounds like in this case, some of that information was not accurate or whatever. I don't want to speculate. But it's a problem that is explainable, but it's hard. It's really kind of hard to wrap your head around. And I'm sure, much like in 2008, we will see changes to the way in which some of these things are regulated, or transparency, which, by the way, is going to be a tough thing for the swap market to fight through. But when it comes to Kayenta and how does that help, I really do feel not only do you need information to understand what you're paying people, know what risk exposures you have, understand who you're paying what and why, you need to be able to look smart. And when an investor calls and says, hey, Chris Hagstrom, you're the treasurer, what are you doing with CS today? I got to, and you know, Kayenta's giving you that information in real time fashion. Better yet, the founder comes over your shoulder and says, Hagstrom, you're my top guy. Why don't you know this information? What are you doing? So it's hard to really articulate 2008 Archegos and all these. I mean, they're massive defining moments that are changing the industry. But in the case of Kayenta, I think the theme is about data, information, ease of access, transparency.
Yeah, I guess the observation I'd have is that hedge funds in particular are good at managing position risk and trading risk, although arguably Melvin, you could wonder whether they really should have traded such a big position in GameStop, but leave the exceptions out of that. So they're really good at understanding that, because that's part of managing a portfolio, right? That all makes sense. What they're not very good at generally is understanding counterparty exposures, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I think ends up being flagged up every time as saying, look, that's where our issue is. And that's, you know, as you say, what's my exposure to firm X or Y? You know, if they're not the ones blowing up, you know, people don't focus on it, right? And that's always a mistake. It's always a mistake.
I agree 100%.
So what we haven't talked about much, because I'm incredibly unqualified to talk about it, is the actual technology itself. So this is a cloud-based application. Go ahead.
No, it's a great question. You know, sometimes it is cloud native, so everything is stored in the cloud. The way it's stored, which these are kind of the newer terms of how things operate, everything is containerized, which means it's very secure and separate in its own instance. So everything exists on its own. So there's not like one major thing you can access and uncover all the information. So it's cloud native. It works off of what's called an API, which is simply a device that allows you to ping us for information in our backend system and then take that information over to your front end, your technology stack, whichever part of that you would want. Or you can use our UI, which is user interface, which is really slick and cutting edge. That pings the API as well. And again, the API thing is much more, it is the most efficient, easy to integrate, and fastest way to get information. Many of the legacy firms either don't have them or they're scrambling around trying to set one up. And that's an undertaking. So it also has been designed the way that we designed the system. We have a management team of people that have a lot of expertise in the financing market. We purposely hired about 10 technologists who have nothing to do with finance. So they are technology experts in data, in back-end processing, and in user interface. And then we met together. You tell us the best technology. We're going to tell you how we think the world should look from a treasury perspective, and the meeting of the minds happen. And so I think that's a cool initiative, because when you get technology experts who have been in the seat or have worked at banks or worked in the industry, it can be a little harder to unwind some of the things that they've already done or the way that they've worked in the past. So,
yeah, it's interesting when you talked about the composition of the team, because when I was at ICAP and we launched our trading platform for borrowing and lending equities and ETFs, it was a fascinating experience, because we got two firms from outside. So ICAP, for its trading platforms, didn't do in-house development other than sort of integrating and delivering it through their pipelines. But the systems were developed typically by two different teams. One team that would look at the rule sets and the data gathering and the data formatting and sort of the formulas, and a completely different group that dealt with the UI, because people who are good at sort of angular square boxes and things aren't good at customer stuff. And people that know what you know customers like in a GUI aren't necessarily the best people for sort of the keeping within tram lines. So it's interesting. So it sounds to me like what you said is you've taken that same kind of an approach of different people with different skill sets.
We have, absolutely. And you know, look, part of it also is when you come from the financial sector, finding technologists who have an expertise in those areas, are affordable. You know, you go on this whole new journey of like, where do they exist? How do you find them? Which universities do they go to? And so it's a big learning curve. Obviously, we have people at the firm that are experts in that. But for me, it's just been quite eye-opening to see how much talent is out there and how much we've been able to find.
It's interesting. I'm curious whether clients are also more demanding in terms of what they expect, because we all have our phones. You know, I can get a new app today, right? That will actually change my life today, right? Because it solves a problem that I actually have. And that means that the next time I go to get some technology or look at technology, I go, well, why can't it do that? Right. So do you see demands from the clients and prospects you're talking to as sort of rising up and sort of growing and being, you know, on the verge of unreasonable?
Oh man, it's a very fair and good question. How would I answer that? I would just say we tried to build the system so it's as flexible as humanly possible to be able to deal with that with clients who are asking for the world. We tried to think about this as fundamentally as we could from the bottom up. We aren't going to be able to make every request change for every person. I think we were going to talk about challenges of starting a business. I think one of the biggest challenges I've had, being someone who faces off to clients and has relationships, is managing that seesaw between product delivery, client excitement, client satisfaction, and product completion, right? And it's like, it is an ever-changing balance. And if you talk to people like Matt Bernard and Mike Gentile, who started Enso, they went through similar things, you know, 10 years ago. And we talk a lot about that stuff. And that has been a very difficult challenge. So Roy, what I will tell you is in the beginning, we've tried to build it as flex as possible. We are being a little bit more able to customize in the early stage. We're also managing clients' expectations of here's exactly where we are. This is exactly what it's going to give you. And here's where we're going in the next 3 to 6 months. Very open door, you know, very transparent process to make sure management of expectations is where it needs to be.
Yeah, and look, it is, as you say, a difficult challenge. You know, I always, when I talk to my people that have kind of client-facing roles, it's kind of like you're the client's representative inside the firm, and you're the firm's representative at the client, and you're the one that has to keep everyone happy, right?
That's right.
You know, everyone has to, you know, so it's definitely a challenge there. But look, I guess that's also one of the advantages of being like a first mover client is you get a chance to, maybe influence the development and the look and the feel and the focus and all of that as well. Would that still be the kind of the phase that you're in now where you're still looking for that kind of input from customers based on what you're trying to deliver and develop?
Well, what I would say is we spent the last year listening. And that was an extremely eye-opening and very helpful process. You can imagine, and you know from your experience in the market, the first 10 to 20 clients that you're going to do business with are the people you know the best, right? It's like, these are clients that you've known for a long time. You know they have a need, right? You know them, you know what they need. And then you go on this journey together of, here's what we have, this is what we're thinking, how are you feeling, what about this, what about that, would you pay for this? So I would say, it is the case. And the phase we're at now, we have 2 live clients. We're testing with 8 more. We probably have another 20 or so behind that. And those are going to be the relationships that I personally know the best and that Mark knows the best and Matt and Kelly and the management team know the best. And so that makes that part of the development more friendly and easier because they're people that are willing to listen and are patient and, you know, you can be open with, and so that part of it has actually been helpful and has made the system better.
Right. And, you know, we talked when I was listening to it, kind of different phases. And so one is kind of gathering information and normalizing it, presenting, identifying opportunities. You talked about eventually getting to the stage where not only can you suggest ideas for customers, but you can also help action them I suppose, or initiate them. So where does sort of robotics and AI fit into the pathway, I guess?
It's funny you ask it, because we hired a technology person who's part of our team. He's fantastic. And he asked me the same thing. I'm really interested in AI. If I take this job, where are we going with that? And I said, you know, it's a super interesting question, because the way we work fundamentally now is we gather all this data, which is going to be valuable and going to be helpful to our clients. We've started the framework of this kind of basis treasury system. But you can envision, once the scale of the system is growing, there's a ton that you would be able to do with AI around behavior and the way things are moving and changing, and how are clients being either helped or hurt by those changes. So I would just say, I couldn't tell you exactly how we're going to use AI in the future, but I could tell you that we are thinking about it, and that all of the information that we're gathering, we know that there's going to be a place where that kind of technology and, you know, just logic will be able to help us. Robotics, if you think of it on the data side, I guess, but I would think of it more like AI.
Yeah. So for me, because I'm a really untechnology guy who's actually spent my whole career dealing with technology, right? I was involved in buying the first system for my firm when I was a product manager in custody in 1985, right? So I was
making, where was that?
RBC.
Oh, cool. Okay.
They're probably still trying to sort out the mess that I left. But, you know, to me, the thing is, anything robotic is just a process, right? It's just saying, yeah, if this process happens this way, find a way to automate that. And the AI really is just an embodiment of the decision making that humans would make, and just turning that into something that becomes scalable and automated. And the machine learning side of it says, well, if your decision tree is such that you always end up doing this, then I don't really need to actually ask you if you want to do that, because you're going to do that anyway. And then if all of a sudden you start making different decisions, then it goes, oh, why did you do that? Let me understand that. Oh, and you've done it multiple times. Okay, so now that's part of the process. So I think all of these things, but it starts, as you said, with the data, right? Nothing works without the data. So it makes sense where you've started. So what's your vision of when this is fully rolled out? And I realize nothing is ever fully rolled out, because you come up with ideas and, you know, maybe other applications. What does it look like? I don't know whether that's, you know, 3 years out or 5 years out. Where is this headed?
Well, I hope it's a multi-billion corporation will be the first thing that I hope. By the end of this year, I feel very comfortable and confident about the product offering that will be there. We have a product offer right this second, and it is getting massively better every day. So by the end of the year, when I think of our optimizer and everything that we want to be able to offer, we're going to be in a good place by then. And, you know, we position ourselves that we're going to be around for a while as a company, which is exciting, because for me, it's all about product delivery. And then how do you grow from there? I'll give you just a couple of quick interim steps that I think will happen, and then we'll talk about maybe 3 to 5 years. So if we get that full product delivery, the key for us will be accessing distribution networks like OMS systems, who have 500 captive clients, administrators who have another 1,000 clients, finding partners who need our technology and our software but don't currently have it, and they have a front end that everybody's so used to looking at, they're going to look at it every day. We take our system, plug it into that, and then we're going to get the eyes of the 500 or 1,000 people. So I think we are going to hand-to-hand combat with a lot of clients, because we have a lot of relationships. We'll have success there. To scale, we're going to find other avenues or venues, like I said, administrators, OMS. And then, you know, the future is being part of a bigger picture or part of the puzzle. I guess if I could holy grail it, I would say we want to be the standardized format of interaction between banks and hedge funds. Maybe that means the banks have to buy us at some point, because we're so perfect to provide the information to hedge funds. That's how we're going to layer it. Or on the flip side, I'm not sure. But if you do want to think about the future, you have to think about things like standardized technology, centralized exchanges. You know, there's a lot of companies out there thinking about and talking about that. And our software is perfectly positioned to kind of fit right in there and to deliver that to both sides of the market. And, you know, probably my punchline would be, obviously, it'd be fun to be part of a company or a group of companies who are trying to achieve those things. And, you know, we're always talking to partners in the market about where we might fit in and how we collectively could become something much bigger, 1 + 1 = 6 or whatever. So,
yeah. And look, I think that's all driven by technology enablement, because, you know, in the past, you used to have to go to a provider who did everything for you. And yeah, you know, one prime broker, I get that. You might have two, but the reality is you were reliant on them for everything. And that applies really across a multitude of businesses. But now it is much more about best of breed, and you have to find a way to actually work with other people to deliver that. So that completely jives with kind of my thinking. So
great.
So either we're both incredibly right, or we'll move on to the next phase after that.
Whatever that is. I hope we're right, Roy.
So Chris, it sounds like you're really just on a personal basis. It sounds like you're really excited about this.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, you make a transition in your career. I was fortunate enough to work on Wall Street for almost 30 years, and it was awesome, and I traveled, and it was great. It was exciting to be able to shift gears and take a lot of what I learned and who I knew throughout that journey into something entrepreneurial. I mean, it kind of fell in my lap, and the fact that I knew Matt and Dan for a long time, it's been great, because one, you work with people that you really know and that you really like working with. Two, every decision you make is affecting the value of your corporation. It's not just, you know, or the life cycle of your firm, right? It's like you have to raise money to stay alive, or you have to make revenue to stay alive. And we've been able to do that. And so, you know, those things are super rewarding. And I know you can appreciate that, because you've seen both sides, big bank and now starting your own business. So it's great. It's been fantastic. And if I could punchline, I don't know what the punchline question will be, but again, I think the reminder, if you can leave this discussion with anything about Kayenta, it's industry experts who have a good inside view, coupled with fantastic technology and a vision that we listen to hundreds of hedge funds to come up with, that takes you all of your data, gives it back to you in readable fashion, saves you money, makes you money, and makes your life easier. So,
well, look, and I think that's probably a great place to close it. You know, the challenge, of course, is there's lots of great ideas. Not everything actually happens. And at the end of the day, it's about whether you're actually delivering value to customers, right? That should be what determines success. And look, I think disruption is inevitable. And it's, you know, I keep, as an outside observer looking at these sorts of things, I often wonder, will it be people from the business that actually change it? Or will there be outside disruptors that take a fresh approach and, you know, boot the rest of us out? And so to me, I'm always pleased to see people with knowledge and experience and understanding taking that into the technology space and trying to make it a better business. So so I wish you and your colleagues quite a lot of luck with that.
Thank you, Roy. It was a pleasure. It was good. Yeah, thank you so much for today.
Great. Appreciate your time. Thanks very much. And that's a wrap.
Thanks, Roy.
Before I get to my summary of the show, what I want to do is make a quick pitch. This show is brought to you by PeerPoint Financial, where we make a ton of free content available on securities finance. In addition to these podcasts, we also do a weekly blog. We do twice weekly live streams on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And we also provide free primers as well as our paid for courses. But this, of course, costs time and money. And if you find the content helpful and want the shows to remain ad free, then we need your help. And by help, I mean, I'd like you to buy me a coffee at our Buy Me a Coffee page. and there'll be details in the show description. Look, a simple one-off donation is really super appreciated and helpful. And we also have monthly recurring memberships with different benefits, including access to one of our monthly Q&A sessions for exclusive members only. I drink a lot of coffee, and I'd appreciate it if you buy me one. As I said, the link is in the show description. Now let's get back to the summary. I thought that was a great session with Chris. I hope you did as well. You know, many people get to a certain age and experience level, and they want to take that knowledge and their skills and use them to make a difference. And it sounds to me like that was Chris's motivation in joining Kayenta. Everyone talks about solving problems for clients, and technology is almost always somewhere in the mix. The challenge, though, is that technology for the sake of technology is not useful and can often be disappointing. But technology guided by client needs, spec'd, tested, implemented, and applied by experts is the secret sauce that Chris referred to in his comments. The challenge to disrupting the status quo, though, as I said in the intro, you know, efficiency and automation often means tighter spreads for service providers. So that's the challenge, and that's where you get the pushback. You know, Chris believes that efficient clients are in many ways better for PBs to service, and I think there's a lot of truth in that, but that doesn't necessarily make the pathway easier. Chris described the lack of standardization across prime brokers in, for example, calculations and interpretation means that hedge funds using multiple PBs have the challenge of normalizing data themselves, or more likely, accepting the cost inefficiencies that not normalizing brings. And look, the reality is hedge funds of any size now really have more than one PB. So the problem is one that is a permanent one and likely to grow. Now, this lack of standardization is a common theme across just about any aspect of securities finance that hasn't been mandated by regulators. So I think we can all relate to it from our own perspectives. To sum up, it's an interesting proposition, accessible, affordable, and modular, built by experts for clients that they have experience servicing. You know, Kayenta has their core beta clients and a growing prospect base. You know, PBs seem to be at the center of a lot of these efficiency propositions for hedge fund clients. The question is, again, this degree of resistance or pushback. You know, clients are the ones with the wallet spend, but PBs have margins to hit, so it's a challenging world for everyone. You know, do PBs benefit from having more efficient clients? As I said, I think Chris is right. They do, and they appreciate the value of dealing with a more informed client, even if that means the client is less profitable at the margins. And look, the truth is, inevitably, that's where we're going to get to anyway. So whether it's clients doing it themselves, entities such as Kayenta improving the process, or PBs, you know, offering enhancements as a way to differentiate themselves from their own competitors, we'll end up in that spot. So there you have it. Kayenta, as I said, is not the first to try and tackle these issues. I think there's probably room for a number of providers, but as always, the market will determine winners and losers. We encourage you to share topics or guests with us at Peerpoint that you'd like to hear from. So drop me a line at roy@peerpoint.info, or if you're watching on video, you can leave comments and we'll respond. Our contact details are in the show notes, as well as links for Kayenta generally and Chris specifically. The free securities finance content which we provide can be found at our website, www.peerpoint.info. We're active on LinkedIn and Facebook as Peerpoint Financial Consulting, and on Twitter and Instagram as Peerpoint FC. I'm Roy Zimmerhansel. This has been Peerpoint Perspectives, the art of securities finance, and I look forward to catching you next time.